Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that may impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Marco Meglio, editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we've got Dilesh Doshi, Vice President of Health Economic and Outcomes Research at Acadia Pharmaceutical. He spoke on the treatment landscape for patients with Parkinson's disease psychosis, the impact of pimavanserin, the only FDA-approved therapy for PDP, and whether the clinical community needs to re-review the efficacy and safety of other off-label atypical antipsychotics. Let's dive in.
Pimavanserin is still the only FDA-approved drug for the treatment of hallucinations and delusions due to Parkinson's disease psychosis. And as your question kind of implies, there's a number of atypical antipsychotics, such as, for example, quetiapine, that are used off-label to treat Parkinson's disease psychosis. And mechanistically, unlike pimavanserin, these antipsychotics that are used off-label work by both blocking the dopamine receptor as well as serotonin receptor. And that's a little bit more technical, but what that really does is it works on all of these receptors that potentially impact psychosis or mood disorders. And pimavanserin primarily works on the serotonin receptor. And the importance of that is in Parkinson's disease psychosis, because of their movement disorders, a number of these patients are on a medication called levodopa, which actually adds dopamine to their brain function, so they can help with the movement disorders. Now, if you imagine if you're going to add an antipsychotic that blocks dopamine, you kind of create what I call this treatment gymnastics, right? Where the clinicians constantly have to decide, do I take the levodopa down a little bit in dosing and maybe just treat that way to resolve their psychosis? Or do I add a medication that perhaps, you know, mitigates some of the benefits that levodopa have? So they constantly have to balance this efficacy and safety.
What are some of the complexities in treating Parkinson's disease psychosis? And typically, how do we sort of overcome any issues with drug-to-drug interactions, considering these patients are obviously on a lot of other medications? They have a lot of symptoms, not just psychosis themselves. So how do we sort of balance that and sort of, you know, path our way through that?
I think what you said is these patients have a number of symptoms. And as we all, if we've met a Parkinson's disease patients, we know their number one symptom is their movement issues, right? They have problems with their movement, with their gait. And as the disease evolves, they have issues with cognition, perhaps what's something called Parkinson's disease dementia, and then a whole bunch of other physical ailment as well, in addition to their movement disorder. So really, you know, the challenges, as I mentioned earlier, is to be able to treat their psychosis, because these are real symptoms. When patients get psychosis, it really impacts their caregivers. It impacts their day-to-day life in addition to their movement disorders. In fact, we know that just having psychosis in addition to Parkinson's disease worsens the prognosis for Parkinson's disease patients. So the drug-drug interaction you mentioned, you know, as I said earlier, what you really want to do is to treat their psychosis without impairing any of their other symptoms or working against any of the other medications they may be taking for their symptoms. And specifically, the motor symptoms or the movement symptoms that we talked about, that some of the other antipsychotics have shown to impair those symptoms, or cognition. And what we saw in our clinical trials and has been sort of validated in some real world evidence, Marco, is when pimavanserin was used in our clinical trials for Parkinson's disease psychosis, it did not impact motor symptoms, which is, again, unique to pimavanserin. And perhaps we don't see that with other atypical antipsychotics. So it's really, again, going back to the terminology, is that treatment gymnastics that you have to do by using off-label antipsychotics, you hopefully don't have to do by using pimavanserin.
You mentioned the results on quetiapine. So can you talk a little bit about that specifically and whether those results sort of change our perception or use of the drug going forward, whether you believe that this should be something that, you know, should not be used as much? Just what's your thoughts overall on that?
Yeah, and you know, when we started this interview, Marco, you mentioned the recently published meta-analysis of all the clinical studies in Parkinson's disease psychosis, right? So sometimes, you know, people would say that just because a drug is not approved doesn't mean it doesn't work, right? Just maybe manufacturers or clinicians, researchers just didn't do the studies. In this case, in the meta-analysis, what we found out that there is actually published clinical studies for quetiapin, for pimavanserin, and a number of other atypical antipsychotics. And when you look at, you know, this analysis took about 20 studies, over 1,000 patients. When you look at in the totality of all of the evidence, the medications that have shown consistent efficacy are pimavanserin, not surprising, it is approved, and clozapin, which has been available for decades, but has a whole host of blood-related adverse events that people don't like, the reason people don't like to use in elderly population. Quetiapine has inconsistent efficacy, but more importantly, it's been shown to worsen the movement disorder as well as cognition. So the use of quetiapin really, I think, you know, need to be reassessed, if you will, and that's up to the clinician's choice. But there is ample evidence now to show that, again, I go back to the terminology, is quetiapine just results in you having to do some more gymnastics around trying to adjust dosing, trying to adjust medications to get that perfect sort of the sweet spot of being able to treat psychosis and manage the other symptoms, versus with pimavanserin, our clinical trial, and then the real-world evidence have shown that it really does not impair those other symptoms.
Pimavanserin, it's been approved for a couple of years now. You know, after approvals, usually typically sort of see additional post-hoc analyses, you see additional research, individual types of research, you know, larger scales types of studies. So since it was originally approved, how has our knowledge and our use of pimavanserin improved since then?
Pimavanserin was approved in 2016. So now about, you know, almost 6-7 years in the market. And tens of thousands of patients have been treated with pimavanserin. So where we are, fortunately, is now we have like a whole robust set of real-world evidence, what we call, right? Not just clinical trials in hundreds of patients over a few weeks or whatever, but these are in tens of thousands of patients over, you know, multiple months and years when they've been treated with pimavanserin. And what we have consistently seen is that when you look at real-world evidence, and when you look at the outcomes, not just the clinical outcomes like resolution of your psychosis, but outcomes that sometimes matter more to patients and caregivers, such as hospitalization, emergency room visits, long-term care placement. And recently there was a study published that looked at a large patient population using Medicare Medicare database, CMS database, that shows that when patients use pimavanserin versus some of these other atypical antipsychotics over a 12-month period, so this is real-world evidence collected, you know, from patients who've used this in their day-to-day sort of practice, shows that it had lower rates of hospitalization, had lower rates of ER visits, and had lower rates of long-term care admissions. So those are, you know, maybe not clinical symptoms or clinical outcomes, but what that show us that when the symptoms hopefully get resolved, symptoms of psychosis, there is these other benefits that can only be sort of studied in real-world evidence, which is now we have. So over the 6 to 7 years, what really has shown is reaffirmed the efficacy of quetiapine, and the safety and the tolerability profile still seems to be what we saw in our clinical trials, Marco. And then this whole breadth of real-world evidence, it just gives us that additional insight around how patients do in day-to-day when they actually take it outside their clinical setting.
We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Doshi to keep you up to date on the latest developments in neurology. Welcome to the Neurology News Minute. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. First, on March 29th, Tanzania Life Sciences announced it plans to start a Phase 2 study later this year to assess its investigational anti-CD3 monoclonal antibody vorolumab in patients with non-active secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. The company is expected to accept the FDA's recommendation with protocol for the trial to be submitted in April. Days later, Anavex Life Sciences announced positive findings from the 48-week open-label extension of its Phase 2 study assessing blarcamesine in patients with Parkinson's disease dementia. All told, the agent met its primary and secondary objectives, which included MDS, Unified Parkinson's Disease Rating Scales, Parts 2 and 3, and Clinical Global Impression Improvement. Later that day, new long-term Phase 3 data on eplontersen, an agent in development for patients with hereditary ATTR polyneuropathy, showed clinical benefit for up to 66 weeks of treatment. The FDA recently accepted the company's new drug application for the therapy with a scheduled PDUFA action date of December 22, 2023. In addition to meeting co-primary endpoints, the study also met its third co-primary endpoint of reduction in serum TTR concentration versus an external placebo. And finally, on April 1st, following a planned interim analysis meeting, the Data Monitoring Committee for the Phase 3 COURAGE-ALS trial concluded that reldesemtiv had no functional benefit as a treatment for patients with ALS. Cytokinetics, the drug manufacturer, noted that the trial will conclude and all patients, including those in the open-label extension study, will discontinue treatment immediately. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com, or you can check out the corresponding link in the show notes. And now, back to Dr. Doshi.
In your opinion, are there, and we're still learning, obviously, more about the mechanisms of Parkinson's disease. There's still a lot to learn about Parkinson's disease as a whole, but are there potential predictors of mortality in Parkinson's disease, and specifically those with Parkinson's disease psychosis?
Let me just kind of go back to the comment you made earlier. One of the things, especially when you look at this multi-domain symptom disease, like Parkinson's disease and then Parkinson's disease psychosis specifically, is we as a society don't really pay attention to caregiver burden, right? Now, if you look at the population, and indulge me to sidetrack a little bit. You know, the Parkinson's disease population is an older population. A number of these patients are being taken care of by their spouses or their partners or their children who, you know, have their lives, busy lives as well. And so to the extent that these kind of, specifically Parkinson's disease impacts on the caregiver burden, it's I think, not as well studied or reported, and I think we need to pay attention to that. And then when these patients develop psychosis, as you can imagine, you know, the outbursts that relates that are due to psychosis and stuff really impacts those caregivers' life as well, the sleep disorders, et cetera. So that aside, the mortality question is a great question because, first of all, just to be clear, all of the antipsychotics, including pimavanserin, have a box warning from the FDA that there is a potential increased risk of mortality compared to placebo. But what we saw in our clinical trials, as well as now what we've seen, actually, for questions about predictors, there is enough evidence now, Marco, to show that when patients develop psychosis due to Parkinson's disease, there are twice as likely to have higher rates of mortality, higher rates of hospitalization, long-term care visits, all of these outcomes that essentially indicate poor prognosis, right? So is it that something neurologically that happens because of psychosis, or is it the psychosis means that the disease has progressed to that certain level? I don't know. I don't think we all know. But just we know that there is ample evidence that when you get psychosis due to Parkinson's disease, your prognosis is much worse, including mortality. And so the question of mortality, you know, it's not something you can just study in a 10-week or a 12-week study. You really have to have long-term data. Recently there were two studies published, one by Mosholder and one by Layton et al. Both looked at, again, Medicare, because this is the population that pretty much uses Medicare as their primary payer and a primary provider of services, healthcare services. They looked at this analysis. And what one study showed that over a 6 month period, pimavanserin had significantly lower risk of mortality compared to atypical antipsychotic. And the other study looked at, up to 12 months, that patients who used pimavanserin had lower mortality rates compared to atypical antipsychotic. And additionally, there was a sensitivity analysis done specifically looking at quetiapine, and the results were quite similar. So one is around predictors, just having this P in addition to PD increases your risk. And so we really need to make sure that the medications we're using does not additionally contribute to that risk. And I think, again, today, because we have health technology and everybody, all of us have electronic health records and our you know, claims, there is an opportunity to really look at this real world data, real world evidence, and see what's happening in real life as opposed to in a short term clinical trial.
I know PD psychosis is a common thing in Parkinson's disease, but are there ways and sort of preventative measures that we can try to take to lower the risk of PD psychosis, or even, you know, hopefully one day prevent psychosis in general?
I am not aware of that, any kind of preventive measures you can take to prevent the diagnosis or the appearance of psychosis symptoms. What I do know is when the psychosis symptoms appear the first time, patients, caregivers, and clinicians are at times sort of dismissive of the symptoms, right? Grandpa is seeing a dog that's passed away 5 years ago. Okay, well, that's not a big deal. Let's just move on. And unfortunately, when they decide to treat, it's usually a crisis moment, right? They went from having a little bit of hallucinations and delusions to perhaps agitation or something worse, and the caregiver is not able to care for that patient. So what we should consider, especially now we have the approved treatment, is sort of why are we waiting to treat, right? If there is a clinical reason, and there may be, then that makes a lot of sense to wait around and see if there are other ways to resolve the symptoms. But if we're just waiting because we either are not willing to or reluctant to reduce their levodopa dose so that their movement disorders get worse, or adding a medication that does not have as clean a profile from a tolerability, then that's really not a good reason to wait, right? Because it adds certain sort of quality of life issues to these patients, medical issues that we shouldn't really have, this patient shouldn't really have to be subjected to.
What types of trials or research should we be conducting to fully understand which, you know, patients are best candidates for each therapies? Obviously, you know, pimavanserin has a lot of, you know, positives and benefits for itself, but, you know, what types of trials should we be conducting to understand more about the patient profiles themselves and how we can, you know, improve treatment optimization?
That's a multifactorial question, Marco, because again, just taking aside my personal point of view here, this is not Acadia or pimavanserin. I've spent pretty much my whole professional career in CNS disease. What's sort of discouraging or what makes me a little bit more concerned is the overall investment, not just by industry, but also by public health agency in research related to CNS disorders or neurologic disorders. For whatever reasons it is, over time, that hasn't kept up in terms of what we really need to as a society invest in the research. So that's my personal sort of pharmacist point of view. In terms of what kind of studies, obviously all of us would like to do a head-to-head comparative studies with five different drugs. You know, that's just not feasible for a number of reasons. One is those would have to be large studies, and to recruit patients for these, especially let's say Parkinson's or autism, it's not easy to recruit, you know, hundreds or thousands of patients for these studies. So short of that, you know, FDA has provided some guidance around, again, the issue, the benefits of real world evidence or real world data that the FDA is willing to now entertain, not just randomized double blind controlled trial, which was and still is the gold standard, but look at this real world data in a scientifically rigorous way, right? So what should studies be short of, you know, doing a five arm head to head comparative studies? I think we really should be looking at the real world data because there is plenty of it. And if we can apply the methods that are now available in a scientifically researched rigorously way, I think we can glean a lot more information. Now, the question is, you know, medicine, should it be personalized? It always should be, right? Parkinson's disease, as you mentioned, is a multi-domain disorder, and no two patients are going to be alike, right? So we just always have to balance what those bigger picture of that patient looks like with the treatment of any kind of individual symptoms. But at the end of the day, FDA does a very thorough job when they review their medication, when they approve their medication. And the fact that right now, even in 2023, there is still only one approved medication for hallucinations and delusions for Parkinson's disease should probably say a lot.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.